Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation, and it is Wednesday. Whatever Fat says Wednesday is, it is. Yeah, Acorn's in the news, and there's an old saying, great jokes from little acorns grow. Great jokes from little acorns grow, and I don't know if there are any jokes growing out of the little acorn, but right now the little acorn has given birth to a great deal of large oak trees of corruption, haven't they? Just got this in an email from a friend who will remain anonymous. Dear Michael Savage, I have four extra tickets for the Robbie Knievel event at the Ford Center next weekend in Beaumont, Texas. That's the son of Evel Knievel. Robbie is going to try to jump over 10,000 Obama supporters with a Caterpillar D9 bulldozer. Should be a good time. I don't know who sent it to me, but it's kind of humorous when you think about it. Now, on a non-humorous note, but an important one, I have told you that I am a man who puts my money where my mouth is. And I hope that others in the media would do the same. I'm going to start posting today some letters to do with donations I have recently made to some organizations, so you can see for yourself where my head is at, okay? Here's one. California Association of Highway Patrolmen for immediate release. The Paul Revere Society and Dr. Michael Savage donate $50,000 to the California Association of Highway Patrolmen Widows and Orphans Trust Fund. Sacramento, California, the Paul Revere Society and Dr. Michael Savage, syndicated radio host, noted author of over 20 books, and director of the Paul Revere Society, has donated the generous sum of $50,000 to the California Association of Highway Patrolmen, CAHP Widows and Orphans Trust Fund. The Paul Revere Society is a patriotic organization with a core charter for the protection of this country's borders, language, and culture. Its director, Dr. Michael Savage, is best known for his syndicated radio show, The Savage Nation. The audience, ranging from 8 to 10 million listeners on close to 400 stations across America, making it the third largest radio talk show in the country. Savage has always been a strong supporter of law enforcement and their efforts. He made a significant donation to the surviving families of the four Oakland police officers gunned down in the spring of 2009. Dr. Savage applauds the men and women in uniform who place their lives on the line every day to protect our freedoms. It is Dr. Savage's sincere hope that this current donation of $50,000 will help aid the families of those that have paid the ultimate price in service to California citizens. The Paul Revere Society and Dr. Savage pledged the money to the CAHP Trust Fund in June 2009. For more information on Dr. Michael Savage, visit michaelsavage.com. So I want you to understand that over the next few days, I'm going to release on this program and on my website the amounts and the organizations I have made donations to, so you can get a picture of who I'm interested in helping. It's as simple as that. And that's all. That's all there is to it. I'm not looking for a halo. There are people out there who deserve help. There are animals who need help. And there are people who are helping the animals. I mean, I'll give you another example. I'm not going to read the group. But it turns out that I gave some money to an elephant fund. And they said to me from their office today, we thank the Paul Revere Society and Dr. Michael Savage to help elephants in Malawi. If I'm mispronouncing it, I'm sorry. IFAW's epic translocation of 83 elephants in that country solved a major conservation problem. In other words, I helped them move 83 elephants away from the murderers who are butchering them, the poachers. Okay, so in other words, money does matter. Money does matter, and your donations matter no matter where you send them. I'm not telling you where to send money, but you ask, many people have asked, what do you really believe in? What do you give money to? So those are some of the things. Now let's go back to the news. Great jokes from Little Acorns Grow. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com is the website. All the news. The biggest story is that Jimmy Carter, who himself, in my opinion, is a blatant anti-Semite, by every one of his statements and deeds, Jimmy Carter meets the standard for racist. He's now saying that any opposition to Obama's Obamacare or his desire for socialized medicine, to put it in other terms, is because he's black. Jimmy Carter claims that anyone who raises any statement against Obama is a racist. Now, coming from Jimmy Carter, it's laughable in that everything that's come out of his mouth over the last 30 years has not only been un-American, but it's been anti-Jewish and anti-Israel. So I'll let it sit at that. I mean, you know, it's like the kettle calling the whatever. You know what I'm saying? Gold surges close to record high. Why not? I mean, if you're printing money and you can't print gold, what do you think's going to go up and what do you think's going to go down? And going back to Acorn again, pimp and the prostitute, that's a big story. And the person who should get all the credit for it, really, are not only the young guys who did it, the conservative team behind the pimp busts at Acorn, but it's Andrew Breitbart. Andrew Breitbart owns this story. It's being stolen by the Hemorrhoid. The Hemorrhoid, as you well know, is so desperate for attention. He's like a girl at a wedding who will not stop dancing. You ever see that type? That when you ever go to a wedding and there's always a little girl who they can't get off the dance floor? That's the Hemorrhoid with ears. No matter what anyone does, he takes the credit for it. So the Acorn story does go to and Andrew Breitbart, who we're going to get on the show. We're going to talk a little bit today about the insurance reform scam that they're trying to promote, that you know it is health care, whatever, and all of the other stories of the day on the Savage Nation. Again, I invite you to call the program at 1-800-449-8255. Here's another story. Mexican-American astronaut isn't changing course on immigration stand. NASA went ballistic when Jose Hernandez, he's apparently a Mexican astronaut, he's actually a U.S. astronaut who went up in a U.S. space shuttle. And Jose Hernandez advocated legalizing illegal aliens in the U.S. shortly after his return to Earth. And NASA went crazy on this. Now, have you heard the joke about the Polish astronaut, by the way, since we're talking about a Mexican-American astronaut? Have you heard the joke about the Polish astronaut? You haven't, because there aren't any. Ha ha. All right, now I'm going to hear from the Polish-American groups. Have you heard the joke about the Chicago astronaut? No, you haven't, because there aren't any. Have you heard the joke about the San Francisco astronaut? Yes, there are plenty of those. New York City, WOR, Ken, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, it's an honor to speak to you.
If anyone else says it's an honor, I think I'm going to stop taking calls. Let me explain why. I have to do this, and guys, I know that you do this because people in the business want you to say it, because they're extremely insecure and very, very thin-skinned. Please don't say it's an honor to call me. Without callers, without listeners, we'd have no show. So it's actually our honor that you even call the show. Now what's on your mind?
Okay, Dr. Savage, I recently heard there was a poll by IDM or something saying that if the health care was to go through, 45% of the doctors said that they would quit.
Did I say on this show yesterday? Didn't I say right on this show that who's going to go to medical school to go to work for a busted system like that? You know, when you look back on the public option in medicine in the ex-Soviet Union, a doctor was not considered a very prestigious job. Teachers were higher on the social scale than doctors because doctors were pretty poorly paid in the ex-Soviet Union. Now, if that's what Obama wants as a model, he's going to have it.
It makes me sick to my stomach.
Well, why? Don't you want doctors from the third world who can't speak English taking care of you, no prescription drugs in the infirmary and dirty smocks? Because then you're going to have Obamacare. It's modeled on Cuba's Castro. They have health care for all. The thing is that the elites won't use it. They either fly to Miami or they fly to Spain or they have the doctor fly in. They're certainly not going to go to a clinic in Havana. Thanks for the call. 1-800-449-8255. Laura in Pittsburgh, PA. You're on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Hi, Mr. Savage. How are you today?
Good.
Wanted to say thank you for your charity work on the animals' behalf. I think that's really a great thing you did.
It is. It's very important to me. You know, they're innocent. Why should men be allowed to hunt down these beautiful creatures and chop their trunks off while they're alive, chop their ivory off while they're living? I've never seen anything like that. Do you know that there are anti-poaching groups now that we support that go out and kill poachers? They don't go to the UN for permission. If they catch them poaching an elephant, they shoot them on sight. Are you aware of that?
I'm with them on that. I mean, you want to...
Yeah, maybe Obama shouldn't hear about it. He's liable to stop them from doing their job. I would say this is the greatest news I've ever heard. The anti-poaching military that is out there, they're basically groups of ex-military guys. They hunt the hunters of elephants, and if they catch them, they kill them. I actually think that's too good a treatment. They should tie them up and cut off their trunks, by the way, and throw them into a piranha-infested lake. Of course, there are no piranha fish in Africa. Thanks for the call. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I think an overwhelming portion of the intensely demonstrated animosity toward President Barack Obama is based on the fact that he is a black man.
That see, now, when you're a racist like Jimmy Carter, you start to see everything through the eyes of race. And since Jimmy Carter has long been an anti-Semite, and probably harbors, since he's from that part of the world, tremendous white guilt for his ancestors' treatment of blacks, he now projects his own feelings that are probably questionable, and says that anybody who opposes Obama's policies is a racist. That would be the equivalent of saying, and the reason some Italians opposed Mussolini was because Mussolini was white, not because of his policies. This is insanity. Listen to Jimmy the Peanut next in 02.
Racism inclination still exists. And I think it's bubbled up to the surface.
Wait. Would that include the black students who beat up a white boy with glasses on a bus the other day? Would that include the four people of color who raped a white girl at Hofstra University, Jimmy, or is only applied to the people that you want to promote because their policies are all socialist, which yours always were? I mean, this is such rubbish. But they're all coming out of the woodwork now. Here they come. Here's another one. Georgia Representative Henry Johnson speaks out about how Wilson's outburst, calling the president a liar, and how it has fueled racist feelings. You got to hear 4 and 5. You're not going to believe them.
If I were a betting man, I would say that it instigated more racist sentiment, feeling that it's okay. You don't have to bury it now. You can bring it out, talk about it fully. I guess we'll probably have folks putting on white hoods and white uniforms again and riding white through uniform. The countryside, intimidating people.
See, this is insanity. This is all racial paranoia being provoked by Jimmy the Peanut because it worked for him. Jimmy the Peanut's entire life has been built around a sort of, I would call it reverse racism, but there's no such thing as reverse racism. Jimmy Carter meets all of the qualifications, in my opinion, of being a stone-hearted racist. And you know something, I'm sorry to bring it back to this, but I have to. His front man, Bill Moyers, that fraudulent phony, his front man, Bill Moyers, wrote a hit piece on me about a year ago, saying that I had provoked violence with my radio show. The British actually picked up what Bill Moyers did in that lie, and I'm considering bringing a libel suit against Bill Moyers for it. I have the article. So I'm telling you that these Southern types, who are deeply racist, I didn't say all Southern types, these Southern types, who still inherently in their encoding, their DNA encoding, carry around tremendous white guilt for what their ancestors did to black people. And I don't share that because my ancestors themselves were close to slaves as they came over to this country. Perhaps Jimmy Carter's ancestors owned plantations. I really don't know. Either it is because of white guilt or because they actually are racists. And there's no better way to hide as a racist than to scream racism and to pretend you're on their side. It's a classic psychological profile of Jimmy Carter. And the reason I say it is because this man holds nothing back when it comes to Jews in Israel. Now, it doesn't matter whether or not you are for or against Israel. You got to understand Jimmy Carter meets all the qualifications that were described by the great Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. when he said, make no mistake about it, there is no such thing as an anti-Zionist. they are all anti-Jew. He said that. I didn't say that. And I guarantee you that Jimmy Carter meets that qualification. But we have to play these things because you're not going to believe it. Jimmy Carter was probably the worst president in American history, caused us more damage than any president in American history. And I'll give you a few layout for you, a few realities here. And the interesting thing is that Obama, in many ways, mimics Jimmy Carter policy-wise. They are both extremely off the ken of balance. They're extreme leftists. Jimmy Carter was always questionable as an American, in my opinion. I'll give you an example. Jimmy Carter attacked the Shah of Iran. Jimmy Carter drove the Shah of Iran into exile. Jimmy Carter encouraged Ayatollah Khomeini to come out of exile in Paris. And in so doing, he allowed and permitted the disease of Islamofascism, or if you wish something more polite, radical Islam, to metastasize across the globe. Historically, that would be laid at Jimmy Carter's feet if you were a fair historical a writer of history. But since most historians are not fair, most of them are either plagiarists or owned by the Democrat establishment through the universities and their funding, you're not going to read that anywhere. But it was Jimmy Carter who empowered radical Islam and spread it like a virus across the planet. So we're going to listen to this cracker, and he says anyone who opposes Obama's socialist tendencies is a racist? No, Jimmy, you're wrong. No, my friend, he who smelt it dealt it is what kids still say in grade school, okay? So I've had enough of Jimmy Carter, to be honest with you. But if you know anything about history, you got to understand Jimmy Carter himself has caused more death and destruction on this planet with his radical left-wing policies than any single man. That's my opinion. It's one man's opinion, and I don't need to argue it with you. It's a reality. You're not going to read it on Wikipedia either. They're all owned by the left-wing establishment. Anyone who's a conservative, attacked by Wikipedia. Anyone who's a communist, socialist, pervert, supported by Wikipedia. So let me tell you something. You want your history? Choose your source. You want to know who Jimmy Carter is? You better not listen to Bill Moyers. You want to know who Bill Moyers is? You better not listen to Jimmy Carter. You believe anyone who opposes Obama's policies is a racist? Then you yourself are a crazy person.
Savage.
They've waved signs likening President Obama to Hitler and the devil, raised questions about whether he was really born in this country, falsely accused him of planning to set up death panels, decried his speech to students as indoctrination, and called him everything from a fascist to a socialist to a communist.
I don't want this country turning into Russia.
And all that was before Mr. Obama's speech was interrupted by a representative who once fought to keep the Confederate flag waving over the South Carolina Statehouse. Add it all up, and some prominent Obama supporters are now saying that it paints a picture of an opposition driven in part by a refusal to accept a black president.
Well, you could say it's a refusal to accept the white president, too, since he's 50-50, right? So I would say that these people focusing on the element of blackness are themselves harboring racist feelings. That was a report from ABC, always Bolshevik crap. You know who they are. They're now pimping for the Obama administration. What's interesting to me is almost identical terminology was used against George Bush for 8 straight years. Nazi, fascist, Hitler. What did they use against Cheney? Nazi, fascist, Hitler, blah, 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 triumph, for a quarter of them. What are they talking about? You know, ABC has long been a disgrace. The president of that organization has long been in the pocket of the Democrats. We all understand that. But for them to come out and I'm sorry to use the word, but the word pimp word is in the air with Acorn out. They're pimping for Obama. So in other words, if you oppose socialized medicine, if you oppose the corruption that's coming out of Chicago, if you oppose bailing out banks which are not benefiting you in any way, shape, or form, if you oppose the collapse of General Motors under Obama, you're a racist. You see, that's how it works, according to the people who run ABC. It's really a disgrace. But I haven't listened to a show, an ABC show, in many a year, frankly. I never listened to a network show. I never listened to one. I turned them off a long time ago. So I have no idea who they think they're talking to because I'm not buying it. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. I have a lot of great callers out there, and we can talk about so many wonderful things. We can talk about them if you wish, and you know how to do it. Healthcare reform is in the air, but I don't know that I want to talk about it anymore. It's not healthcare reform. It is health insurance reform. They moved from healthcare reform about 6 weeks ago into health insurance reform because it's not about reforming healthcare. It is about not privatizing the health insurance industry, but turning a viable private enterprise called health insurance into a publicly owned enterprise. So if you don't like FedEx and you like the U.S. Post Office, you're going to love Obamacare. Let me give you an example. My Telos equipment died yesterday. I have a bunch of home studios, actually five or six of them around America, and I move around quite frequently. One of my units, it didn't exactly die, but it was faltering. So my syndicator sent me a new Telos unit, which is one of the major units that we use for running off an ISDN line. And they said, okay, we'll get it out to you tomorrow. So they sent it last night, ordered it, and they got it to my house this morning at 10 o'clock in the morning, not via the U.S. Post Office, but via Federal Express. I said, you know, when the box came, I go down the driveway in my pajamas, the dog barking, and I say, you know, God bless America. Thank God for private industry. Do you know when my mail comes at my house? 5 o'clock. A dirty old truck with a high carbon footprint, a mail truck. I'm nothing against mailmen. My uncle was a postman. But, I mean, what do you prefer, Federal Express or the U.S. Postal Service? Anyone who runs a business uses one of the express services. Why? Because the federal government has failed at delivering mail. And so it's the same with medical care. Would you rather have a government-owned medical care facility? You think you're going to get better care? You know you're going to get worse care. Everybody knows that. It has nothing to do with racism. It has everything to do with realism. Jimmy Carter is a liar. He's a stone-hearted liar, and he's the worst president in American history, and I think he's a cracker racist to his core. That's my opinion. Chicago, Sirius, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, a pleasure to speak with you. I was just going to comment on your Jimmy Carter commentary. The reason Jimmy Carter was so antagonistic towards the Shah was because the Shah was the single most pro-American and simultaneously the most pro-Israel leader in the Middle East, and because the Shah enacted policies within Iran, which brought Iran back into the 21st century, brought Iran into a cultural paradigm of the West instead of, you know, the backward 7th century, time set. And Jimmy Carter.
Right, and you could argue that Jimmy Carter is a racist for having taken the Iranian women in particular and put burqas over their heads. You could argue that Jimmy Carter himself has caused more damage to human rights around the world than any single American.
Absolutely.
You could make that argument and you wouldn't be wrong. How else would you explain when you have a resurgence of radical Islam around the globe because of Jimmy Carter? And remember what radical Islam stands for, the subjugation of women, racism, the death of the West. If that is good for the world, I'd like to know what's bad for the world. But it's all because Jimmy Carter brought the Shah down and brought Ayatollah Khomeini back from Paris where he was in exile. That's how I analyze this historical reality. And so for Jimmy Carter to sit here now and say that the protesters against Obama are racist, you have to look at the source from which such a statement is coming. Thank you for the call. You know? 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Mark in Houston, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. I think it's an interesting irony that that for years we were characterized as a racist nation because we hadn't elected a black president. And now that we've elected a black president as a country, the audio clip you played a few moments ago seemed to indicate that now we feel free to exercise our racism.
I don't know what it means. I really can't understand it, but they're all saying it's racism. It's not anti-socialism. It's unbelievable to me how many different ways liberals will play the same lie. No, the people can't be hoodwinked again, and they're not going to be browbeaten with liberal guilt anymore. It's enough already with the liberal guilt. You should be guilty. Shut up. You're doing it only because he's black. You could argue they're doing it because he's white. Isn't Obama half black and half white?
Yeah.
No, I'm asking. You want to talk race? Obama had a white mother and a black father. I mean, it's an embarrassing thing to talk about, but I keep hearing he's black, he's black, he's black, he's black. Why can't you just say he's white, he's white, he's white, he's white? He is a multiracial candidate. Wonderful. That's the new world we live in. Why are you harping these leftists on the fact that he's black? He is multiracial. They're the ones who are making his blackness an issue, if you think about it, Mark.
Yes, sir. And it just seems like it's a...
Why don't they ever take the issues themselves and discuss the issues rather than reverting down to what they used all their lives to get ahead, which is saying the race word, race card, race baiting, because that's how they got ahead. Their whole life has been built on beating white people up with race baiting and embarrassment. Well, guess what? I don't want this anymore. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of it. I won't take it anymore. Jimmy Carter can go back where he came from, Mr. Peanut. The worst president in history. New York City. Jimmy, W-O-R, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, for several decades, the Soviet-controlled U.S. Communist Party and their literature, which I have, was writing like, capitalism is racism. To destroy racism, you have to destroy capitalism. Then
let's pause right there. Let's deconstruct every one of their lies. Explain, since you're an expert on communism, Jimmy, how many blacks there are in Fidel Castro's upper echelon of leadership in Cuba.
There are no blacks in Castro's government. In fact, the blacks
right.
in the...
Fidel Castro is a communist dictator. Raul Castro is his brother. Although they claim to have a society of equals, and although Cuba is very much an Afro-Cuban nation with many lineages, predominantly African and mixed with Indian folk, there are virtually no people of African origin in Fidel Castro's inner circle. I know that's a fact.
100% true. And yet the majority of blacks in Cuba, according to communist surveys, love the Cuban Americans and don't like Castro. So there's a problem in Cuba now for Castro. He's lost support of the blacks that he claimed to be aiding and helping in Cuba.
Why do you think that is?
Because the younger people don't remember the old days, and the propaganda is not working, and they know that the Cuban Americans send money, and the Cuban Americans are working, trying to work to free Cuba. So the loyalty.
All right. So one of the classic tactics of the Communist Party was to use racial animosity between the races in America to try and break society down. That was your primary reason for calling, correct, Jimmy?
Right.
Okay, so where do we go from here? But why is Jimmy Carter professing this communist line?
Well, Jimmy Carter is a liberation theologist. He's a Marxist masquerading as a liberal Christian. He helped topple 5 or 6 countries to the Soviets. Somewhere between 3 and 5 million people were murdered by the communists during Carter's reign. And the Congressional Black Caucus are fanatical Castro supporters, even though Castro's flooding black neighborhoods with cocaine and drugs.
Wow, that's quite a statement.
That is quite
a statement. I mean, the drug part of it. I mean, why do you accuse Castro of being the drug lord?
Well, we know from the Soviet defector, General Jan Sezner, the book Red Cocaine was written based on his testimony, that the Soviets, through Castro, one of their goals was to create terror, crime, and racial trouble in America, largely through drug use. And he set up drug networks and penetrated other independent drug networks. The goal was to flood America with drugs. The money was not the main goal from the communists. It was to destroy American society. Money was a way to drive people to get into the business. But the
God
leadership
in heaven.
Of it.
Jimmy, it's worse than even I think. In my worst moments, you make me actually feel that it's much worse than even I fear.
It's a lot worse than people realize. John Conyers, who's anti-police, sent condolences to Gus Hall's funeral. Gus Hall, the Communist Party leader. I was there when they read the letter from Congressman John Conyers, who calls for investigations of the police in New York and elsewhere.
That's why I give money to police organizations. He can go you know where. He can go to you know where. I give money to police organizations and police families that survive, because without them, you know what we'd have in this country? They're the only ones who have the guts to stand up to the gangbangers. Who's going to do it, Marvin and the ACLU? Who goes up and stands up to those gangbangers? Tell me who does it. It's the police, whether they be local, state, national. It's only the police that separate us from total chaos.
You have to destroy the military and the police in capitalist countries, because that's how a capitalist country will collapse. And so they have plans, long-range plans, and they work at them.
Well, is that why Gavin Newsom, the mayor of San Francisco, just came out and said he supports the MS-13 gangbanger who killed an innocent man and his two sons in cold blood? He didn't exactly say he supports him, but he says he's against the death penalty for the gangbanger. It was his sanctuary policies, after all, that permitted this man to even walk the streets. That guy could have been taken off the streets a year before he killed that family. But it was Gavin Newsom's sanctuary policies that prohibited the police from gathering up the gangbanger. So the death is on the hands of Gavin Newsom, in my opinion.
I think you're right. I think you're right. And the ordinary black American is loyal and patriotic. He just has to be alerted to what the Marxists have been doing among his people for several decades.
Well, Jimmy, my lad, thank you for calling. Things are bad all over. But, hey, play the song before the break. Potatoes are cheaper, tomatoes are cheaper. Now's the time to grab a gal. That was a Great Depression-era song, I understand. It was way before my time. This is after the Depression was over. This is... Wait, stop the song. They played this after the Depression, when they were trying to end the Depression. They were trying to encourage people to go out and go shopping again. So this song could be coming from Obama, Bernanke, and the Treasury Secretary, the Boy Scout, Geithner. Let's hear it.
Potatoes are cheaper. Potatoes are cheaper. Now the time of fall in love.
See, that was the age of the radio commercial, so they played songs like this on the radio to encourage your grandfather to go out and buy soap and candles and get married. When have you last heard anything come out of the government encouraging a man to meet a woman and get married and raise a family? Raise your hand if you can repeat one commercial, one statement, one implication that a man should meet a woman, marry her, and have a family. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I think an overwhelming portion of the intensely demonstrated animosity toward President Barack Obama is based on the fact that he is a black man. Racism inclination still exists. And I think it's bubbled up to the surface because of a belief among many white people, not just in the South but around the country, that African Americans are not qualified to lead this great country. It's an abominable circumstance and grieves me and concerns me very deeply.
What a horror that this Jew hater, Jimmy Peanuts Carter, would say that anyone who criticizes Obama's social policies are racist. You know, you could argue against this so many different ways, and it's embarrassing that this man is still on the world stage. It's an embarrassment. I told you I had a professor when I was working for my doctorate at Berkeley. He was a very bright doctor, and he said to me, the first thing that older people lose is their judgment. Jimmy Carter has lost his judgment. I mean, he's a long-time left-winger, that we know. And he would naturally be defensive about Obama's policies. That I can understand. That's his bias. But to pull out the race card at this phase of his career, not understanding that the American people are not going to buy it, number one, and it's going to further marginalize Jimmy Carter, number two, shows that he's lost his judgment. By the way, I have a question for you. Those of you who've ordered Banned in Britain, would you please go to michaelsavage.com and take a look at the new cover? We made a new one over the weekend, put it up yesterday. The new subtitle is Michael Savage, Banned in Britain, Beating the Liberal Blacklist. And the word blacklist is in a sort of semi-gothic heavy metal type, to use a phrase that isn't real, heavy metal type, but you know what I'm saying, kind of gothic Germanic type. Beating the Liberal Blacklist. Because it's men like Jimmy Carter, as you well know, who are behind the liberal blacklists around the world, in my humble opinion. 1-800-449-8255. Again, let's go back to Jimmy Carter's allegation that the protesters at the Tea Parties, the protesters at the town hall meetings are all racist, that they're not against socialized medicine, they're not against the rape of our treasury, they're only out there in the streets because Obama is a black man. Now, of course, you can't prove or disprove this. However, let's try to use reason and logic. Since Jimmy Carter wants a racial discussion and our new Attorney General Eric Holder said that we're all cowards because we won't have the discussion, let's have the discussion. So let's start with the first premise that everyone opposes Obama's policies are secretly racist. Now, the interesting lie about that is that Obama's not a black man per se. He's a half African and half Caucasian man. I didn't bring this up. It's not easy for me to discuss this. I grew up in a multiracial city. Were most of my friends white? Yes. But did I associate it with black people? Yes. Did I go to school with black people? In fact, I found my high school yearbook. It's funny. I don't even remember. I found it about a year ago, and I dug it up. I have some kids who weren't white. They wrote nice things to me in my high school yearbook. So, yes, I had black friends, if you want to know the truth. I don't even remember. I don't remember by race. I remembered more by things they did than by what color they were. But apparently Jimmy Carter, growing up where he grew up and being who he really is, he can never put race aside because the man is a stone-hearted racist. Now, what do I mean by racist? A racist is a man who sees everything through the lens of race. So it doesn't matter which side he says he's on. By his own statement, he is the racist. Do you understand this? But on the level of Obama himself, the man is not a black president. He is very proudly a multiracial man. He had a white mother and a Kenyan father. Now, where he was born is another story, but we won't go into that right now. We're not allowed to discuss that either. Apparently, anybody who brings that up is evil and such. But let's put aside the birther issue. Let's put aside the fact that they're trying to smear people who claim that Obama is a socialist. How many times do I have to say to you, criticizing a president, calling him names, is very American. It was done for 8 straight years to George Bush. 8 straight years, Nazi, fascist, Hitler. What did they say about Cheney? Nazi, fascist, Hitler. 8 straight years when they did it, ABC had no problem with it. Now, one person says it as a rally. Now, everyone's a racist. That's number one. So you understand it's the bias of the media. But number two, let's look at the racial makeup of Obama again. His mother was a white woman. His father was a man from Kenya. Why are we hearing that anyone who criticizes Obama's policy is a racist? The answer is because the radical left, Jimmy Carter typifying that movement, is obsessed with using race as a tool to manipulate white liberals through guilt. But that tool no longer works except in demented quarters where the IQ is lower than 80. Nobody buys it anymore, Jimmy. You use that tool all through the 60s. It does not work anymore. So take your hammer and take a walk. You know what I'm saying? Take your hammer and go build another fraudulent housing project somewhere with Acorn money.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
We'll probably have folks putting on white hoods and white uniforms again and riding through the countryside intimidating people. And, you know, that's the logical conclusion if this kind of attitude is not rebuked.
I think an overwhelming portion of the intensely demonstrated animosity toward President Barack Obama is based on the fact that he is a black man, that he's African American.
Well, if I had a hammer, I would lend it to Jimmy Carter so he can go build another Habitat for Humanity. In fact, I think the fitting place for Jimmy Carter to retire to would be one of his Habitats for Humanity and never be heard from again, because this man is definitely creating enmity between the races, in my humble opinion. Play If I Had a Hammer, guys. I thought you had that one.
I had a hammer.
Is this sung by Peter, Paul, and Jimmy?
I'd hammer in
Pete Seeger,
the
old communist wobbler.
I'd hammer
they don't ever away, do they? 90 years old, they perform in Marin County, and the people go there swooning on LSD. 90 years old, they're still singing communist work songs, and the schmuck children come out of mansions for $20 million, and they're all sitting there, oh, yeah, up to power to the people. All right, well, you get the picture. Now, as I said earlier, there's definitely a big scandal going on, and it's got to do with Acorn, and that's, of course, who elected Obama. One of the chief ways he got elected was through the Chicago way, which is fake votes. As you well know, in the old days in Chicago, they gave them a $5 bottle of brandy if they would vote for someone. Now they give out millions of dollars, and the group Acorn spreads it around. And as I said to you, great jokes from little acorns grow. What you're about to hear is a result of James O'Keefe III. He's a filmmaker and a female partner posing as a pimp and an escort that are trying to get a housing loan through Acorn. And in doing so, they find out ways to keep the money they make off the books and to get some of it put towards the pimp's congressional run. The Acorn worker, Tressa Kalki, describes her years as an escort and also describes killing her husband and how she planned it out. We thank Andrew Breitbart for this story. Listen to clip six.
I shot him. I shot him.
Self-defense?
Yeah. And then I just picked up the gun and said,
"F***
you." And I shot him. And he died right there. And, but before that, I had done laid some groundwork. You know, I went to a domestic violence shelter, and I pleaded my case with them. And so everybody in town was knowing that this was happening.
So you hear now there's a double going on here. The woman says she shot her husband, but she laid groundwork before killing her husband. This is an Acorn worker. By first having gone to domestic violence shelters, so that everyone in town thought that he was committing violence against her over the years. Keith, the filmmaker, explaining how he's bringing in girls from overseas and explaining it to the Acorn worker. Listen to Seven.
We're bringing these girls from overseas, but we are going to take a cut of the profit, and I intend to use the profit from the tricks the girls perform to fund my political campaign and the advertising.
But you see, do you think every congressman, every legislator, do you think that even Obama, you know, our new president, or any of them, ever actually put down every single resource where they got their money? They got their money from bootlegging and prostitution. They got their money from running illegal whiskey. And I ran a service.
Really? Yeah. Well,
Heidi Fleiss is my hero.
So here's an Acorn worker, a former hooker, saying that the Kennedys got their money from bootlegging and prostitution. And then she explains how she ran an escort service and how Heidi Fleiss is her hero. This is the kind of... These are the kind of people that Acorn is associated with. They helped elect Obama with fraudulent votes. Listen to the clip eight now.
I talked to congressmen, senators, assembly people every day. Yeah. Gloria Negrete McLeod, Torres. Let's see. Wilmer Amina Carter is assemblywoman. Mm-hmm. I am the 62nd district. Mm-hmm. Obaka is right up here in San Bernardino. Barbara Boxer.
So Barbara Boxer, she counts amongst her mentors. And you always thought Barbara Boxer was in it for the poor and downtrodden. You thought smart Barbara from Brooklyn was in it for the poor, huh? You didn't know any better, huh? She's done pretty good, Boxer. Fooling the liberals of Marin County and the people of the state of California. Now listen to clip nine.
I mean, they pay thousands of dollars more if they're a little violent with these 14-year-old girls.
Again, it's how you want it to be run. Yeah. Don't forget, you can mold this into anything you want.
Okay.
You know, you can mold it into the level of decency or indecency.
See? So she's an Acorn worker, and she's advising an undercover operative how to beat the law and how to use underage girls as prostitutes. And she counts many politicians as her friend, including Barbara Boxer. So, ladies and gentlemen, I rest my case. We go back again to the old saying about the missionaries who came to Hawaii to do good and did very well indeed. And we bring it up to date to the liberal Democrats, who are the richest people in Congress, who have every day of their life espoused how they're doing good for the people, when in fact their families are doing very well indeed. It's all about the money. It goes all the way back to yesterday's discussion on the Savage Nation of Tammany Hall politics, the 5 points, and the gangs that ran New York. And you say, well, that's the way of the world. It's always been that way. Explain this to someone earlier. She said to me, so you say nothing's really changed, so what's the big deal? And here's the big deal. In other words, the people always knew that the political system ran that way, that it was patronage and that it wasn't what you knew, it was who you knew. Everybody knows that. I'm not shocked by it. I'm not a child. I knew it all the way back into my academic years that some of the biggest morons wound up running departments, not because they were brighter than anybody else in the sciences, but they kissed certain butts along the way and they were put into positions. Going all the way back, we saw that, and it was no shock to me. But what happened now is that now that the country's treasury is empty and that we are actually in the negative and we're bankrupt, the old game is over. The old game of largesse from the treasury is over. The old game of rewarding pimps and prostitutes for votes has to be over. In other words, it all worked when it worked. But now that there's no money, it can't work anymore. The old game is over. And that's why there's double outrage. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Racism in connection still exists. And I think it's bubbled up to the surface because of a belief among many white people, not just in the South but around the country, that African Americans are not qualified to lead this great country. It's an abominable circumstance and grieves me and concerns me very deeply.
Now united, two arms in Dixie. Advance the flag of Dixie. Hoorah, hoorah. For Dixie's land we take.
Now, the reason I'm playing the tune Dixie is, A, because it's a very spirited song, and because America does still have many proud Southerners, not all of whom were racist. They just opposed the Northern industrialists. I mean, many of you don't even understand that the Civil War was more than about race. It was also about a trade war between the North and South. But you have to know history for that, so I don't expect you to know that. But the reason I'm playing it is because we looked up Jimmy Carter's early life, and it turns out that his great-grandfather, Private L.B. Walker Carter, God bless his soul, served in the Confederate United States Army, in the Confederate States Army. And so in honor of Jimmy Carter's great-grandfather, Private L.B. Walker Carter, who lived between 1832 and 1874, who served in the Confederate States Army, let's hear Dixie in his honor, because he did march to Dixie. He did march to this tune. And we don't want to insult his grandfather just because he fought with the Confederate Army. There's no reason to despise Jimmy Carter. There are other reasons to despise Jimmy Carter.
Let all hearts be now united. Two arms, in Dixie. Advance the flag of Dixie. Hoorah, hoorah.
During Carter's presidency, he attacked the Shah of Iran for being too pro-American and too in favor of Israel. He released the Ayatollah Khomeini, who had been driven into exile by the Shah. The Ayatollah Khomeini brought back a virulent form of radical Islam to Iran. The women of Iran have been oppressed ever since. Iran has been a thorn in the side of Western civilization ever since. Millions of people have died as a result of Jimmy Carter's policies. And yet he gets away with this rubbish because his friends at Always Bolshevik Crap, that's ABC, Nothing Bolshevik Crap, that's NBC, CBS, you can make up the acronym any way you want. They're all in his camp, okay? By the way, if you remember Carter's presidency, I was around during it. His brother Billy was often in the news in an unflattering light. If you remember Billy Beer and Billy this and Billy that, you know all of that. So there it is, 1-800-449-8255. The Carter family, incidentally, originated from southern England, and Jimmy's paternal ancestor arrived in the American colonies in 1635 and lived in the state of Georgia for several generations. So let's pause right there. If you were a white man living in the American colonies from 1635 onward and your descendants lived in the state of Georgia, wouldn't you assume that at some point somebody along that lineage held a slave or two? I would assume that if you go back beyond L.B. Walker Carter, not too far back, you'd find out why Jimmy Carter is obsessed with race and why he's so defensive about black people. I think that's the answer here. New York City, WOR. TJ, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me, Savage. Hey, real quick, the thing with Carter, you bring up an interesting point, but I think if you put Carter aside, we're hearing a lot of talk this week about racism in general, and my thought is we're existing too much on the margin of both racism and ACORN from the right. What I think we should do is stop grouping all the people on the right who have some have fair issues about Obama's policy as racist, and stop grouping all the people on the left as people who would support ACORN, or all the people in ACORN would take on a process.
Well, you're a fair-minded guy who's trying to bring balance and bring people together, and I admire that, TJ, but that's neither here nor there. There are many more excesses in the left other than ACORN. ACORN is only the tip of the surface. The biggest excesses can be found right with the stimulus program. $1 trillion given out to bankers on Wall Street, first by George Bush and his Treasury Secretary, and now by Obama. Wouldn't you say that that's pretty radical?
Well, what I would say with that is that's a fair argument by someone who's got an issue with his policy. See, I would rather have that conversation.
Well, I'm having that conversation. I mean, you want to object to Obama's policies, and let's put race aside. How do you justify spending trillions of dollars and most of the money is unaccounted for? It's absolutely astonishing that he's gotten away with this.
Hey, how I would defend that would be in their eyes, in the administration's eyes.
Or how would you defend him? How would you defend him running as an anti-war candidate and doubling the number of troops in Afghanistan? 30 seconds or less.
I don't think the Afghanistan is neither here nor there. He's anti-war. He's not doing anything with it. He's up to nothing troops. You need.
Whoa. What are you talking about? He ran as an anti-war candidate, and he just doubled the number of troops in Afghanistan. What do you mean he's not doing anything with them? They're fighting and dying every day.
I'll tell you what he's doing. He's stringing that war along because he's appealing to both sides, and I don't think he's handling it great. But I, as an anti-war candidate, he should have dropped it out. But I don't think the troop increase is enough to say he's even a war candidate. He's stringing it along, in my opinion.
Well, you don't really know what you're talking about, my friend. He's amping up the war in Afghanistan the very same way that the war in Iraq was amped up, and also the same way Vietnam was amped up in an integral in a small manner of integrals. It was Johnson didn't send 500,000 American troops to Vietnam all at once. He started to do it in groups of 25 and 50,000, and he kept saying, we're winning, we're winning, we're winning. So I think you're losing on that account. And you're trying to do the balanced thing, and you're trying to be a guy who can walk both lines. But I'm going to tell you, TJ, as a guy who wants to do that, it's a hard road to walk on. As they used to say, it's a hard road to hoe, because the fact of the matter is you've got to be on one side of the street or the other. You cannot be on both sides of the street, TJ. You're going to find out that at some point you're going to have to decide which side of the street you're on.
I think that's a fair case. I think for now, though, we're marginalizing people with gripes on both sides by painting them as either ACORN or racist.
I understand. Well, that's certainly a fair statement, but let's talk about Jimmy Carter. Why would Jimmy Carter, a former president, stoop to the level of race baiting in order to defend what is objectionable about Obama's policies?
The reason Jimmy Carter is doing it, probably, Savage, is because he probably truly believes it. Now, that doesn't mean everyone on the left agrees with Carter.
All right, let's stop right there. It's because he probably truly believes it. Now, not everyone on the left would believe that. Why do you suppose that Jimmy Carter has encoded in his DNA the belief that anyone who opposes a black politician is a racist?
I'm not sure that I think we're misguided.
It's because Jimmy Carter harbors guilt feelings about black people. So anybody who says anything against a black politician, he automatically becomes defensive, and he says, well, it's because they're racist. It's because he himself has ambiguous feelings in that direction. That's how I, as a pocket psychologist, would analyze this. I don't need to be Sigmund Freud to see that one. It's projection.
I think Carter is seeing this and catching what a lot of people on the left are seeing as racism, as the people who are shouting and so angry about policy arguments.
Really? Well, what about all the angry people towards Bush and Cheney? How come when they were screaming things against Bush and Cheney, Hitler, Nazi, this and that, everyone was cool with that?
The reason being was because I think Bush in the beginning, first of all, the Hitler-Nazi thing, you bring up a great point. Both sides do it. It's ridiculous. With Bush and Cheney, the reason people got upset with them is I think that they painted people into a corner when they said you're with us or against us. They almost
Well, they were absolutely right. That's exactly how it has to be, because the other side will either kill you or convert you. One day you'll come to understand that your civilization is fragile and can be destroyed very easily.
Savage.
Well, look, what's in the air is the health insurance reform bill. And you notice it changed about 6 weeks ago from health care reform to health insurance reform. We also keep hearing about the public option. Many of us don't even understand what it means. With us right now is a great guy, Congressman Steve King, Republican of Iowa, who's been on the right side of things for a very long time. And I got to tell you why. The man grew up in a law enforcement family in Iowa. He studied math and science. It wasn't fuzzy social science. He started a construction company in 1975 with one bulldozer that's still in business. He has been on the right side of things. He tried to eliminate the inheritance tax. He tried to enforce workplace drug testing. He tried to enforce parenting rights, and so forth and so on. He tried to pass the law that made English the official language in Iowa. So, Representative King, you're one of our good guys. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Thank you for being on the show.
Well, thank you very much, Michael. I'm very glad to be on with you.
Well, let's try to answer some of the questions, because I'm a little confused about a few of them. Number one, I think most people would like some kind of health care reform. And we all agree that the ability to buy insurance across state borders would be of benefit. Could you please explain what that means?
What it means is some states have so many mandates, and that it essentially locks companies out from their states. A state like New Jersey, for example, where a young man at 25 years old in good health could buy a comparable policy to one in Kentucky, but it cost him $6,000 a year in New Jersey and $1,000 a year in Kentucky.
Hmm.
So that's the core of what happens with these prohibitions on buying health insurance.
But let me ask, isn't that because there's so much fraud in Sopranoville over there in New Jersey, that there's so many false claims and that there are fewer in Kentucky? Isn't that partly the reason?
Oh, I'm convinced that's partly the reason there are more false claims, but also there are more mandates in New Jersey than there are in Kentucky. And
all right, what then is the insurance reform ploy that they're playing? They used to say it started out as health reform. Then about 6 weeks ago, we started hearing them say health insurance reform. What is it that the Democrats are getting at there, Representative King?
Well, I believe, Michael, that they had to find a demon. And there wasn't a demon in a general term like health care reform, but there was a demon in health insurance reform. And the president that led the way and the leadership in the Democrat Party began beating up on health insurance companies. I didn't know they were demons. I thought they were people competing in free enterprise. I can tell you there are over 1,300 health insurance companies in the United States who offer a variety of policies numbering in the combination up to 100,000 different combinations. That's a lot of competition, and President Obama said we need more competition.
Yeah, and how can you have competition with a government-run insurance company which will destroy competition? I mean, that's what government-run enterprises do.
And that is so true, and historically it's accurate. I went back and looked through a little bit of the records in 1968 when the federal government first passed the Federal Flood Insurance Program. And at that time, there were property and casualty companies selling flood insurance. It wasn't as big as it is today. But the federal government now sells 100% of the flood insurance in America. There is no private property and casualty company. You go to them if you want to buy flood insurance. They will tell you you have to buy it if you're borrowing money on your real estate through a national bank.
Mm.
And you know, additionally, they are $19.2 billion in the red.
In the red. And by the way, who sells the insurance for them? Are there private companies that they roll it over into to do it, or is the government itself doing it?
As I understand this, it's brokered through private companies that can only sell the government health insurance program. That's
all right, so there it is. In other words, when the Democrats get their hands on the insurance business, it will go to the cronies who supported Obama, period. That's what I thought. In other words, old Chicago-style politics. What is the public option we hear so much about?
Well, the public option is setting up a federal health insurance company that would be essentially a mirror image of the flood insurance that we just talked about that is designed, according to President Obama, to compete against the private sector. But here's what we know. And if you go to my website and just Google Congressman Steve King, you'll see on there a link to the full-color flow chart that shows the H.R. 3200, the federal health health care bill that's passed out of committee in the House. And on that, you'll see at the bottom of it in the center two purple circles, one of them for the traditional health insurance, the private health insurance companies, that would be qualified by the new health insurance czar who would write the rules for every health insurance company and policy in America. That left-hand purple circle would compete against the new right-hand purple circle, which is the public option. And in other words, the new Health Choices Administration czar would write the regulations for every health insurance policy in America, and he'd write them so that the public option could compete, and then on top of that, we would subsidize the public option
with
taxpayer dollars.
Well, it sounds like a lot of red tape to me, as usual. Anytime the government gets involved, it's more complicated and more costly. Obama, during his speech, said that he would look into malpractice lawsuit reform. Was that a lie?
Well, I just simply don't believe it. Look into it. Set up demonstration projects, if I remember the language that was in the speech.
Yes.
We have passed out of the House when Republicans were in the majority, and I serve on the Judiciary Committee, the malpractice reform. And what it does is it's modeled off after California language. This is very close to Texas language. That caps the non-economic damages for medical malpractice lawsuits at $250,000.
Right. We have it in California. No one's suffering as a result.
And it keeps doctors in California that would otherwise leave. And doctors that were leaving Texas have gone back to Texas, and they're back with a healthier health care delivery system than they had before. That's what needs to happen across this country. But Obama is funded, as the Democrats are, by the trial lawyers people, and when you're a wholly owned subsidiary of the Trial Lawyers Association, it's kind of hard to do an independent decision that's good for Americans.
Oh, I agree with you. Now, finally, the big story today is that Harry Reid looked at the bill that just came out of committee today, and he said that the health care bill won't work for Nevada primarily because the cash-poor state of Nevada has no ability to boost Medicaid spending, as would be required under the bill. I don't understand it. Why would this bill require increases in Medicaid spending?
Well, let me just generally speak to that, and that is that the federal government, the people that are drafting these health care reform pieces of legislation, and let's call it a National Health Care Act, are looking for ways to fund it. They want to cut out of Medicare $500 billion. And they want to cut out of Medicaid that they describe as fraud, so they would lower the Medicaid reimbursements to the states. The states would have to make up the difference by law, and that's the pot that doesn't...
So in other words, if they cut Medicaid spending from the federal side, it would be pushed onto the backs of the states to do so, and the states don't have the money.
So it comes back to the American people again. You can't get something for nothing.
So that's why Harry Reid... says that the health care bill that just came out of Senate Finance Committee Chairman Baucus's committee is not good enough for Nevada and it won't work. I don't think he's alone on that, is he?
No, I think that's going to be true with many of the states. I'm going to say most of the states, maybe not every state. And it's also interesting that this bill that was released with the last 24 hours, the gang of six is now a gang of three. There are no Republicans that are with that bill on Max Baucus. So three people in the United States Senate have pitched out an idea. And by the way, I just came from a conversation with Senator Grassley, who is not on that bill.
Unbelievable. Well, I note that Medicaid in Nevada covers limited low-income groups, pregnant women, children, and seniors. But the new bill of Obamacare would expand care to include childless adults. What's that all about? Mm-hmm. What do they mean by childless adults? Are they trying to make sure that every illegal alien from out of the country gets coverage?
You know, I don't know the answer to that one. That's a piece of language that I have not looked at or considered, but I can tell you that they are trying to fund illegals. It is not an accident that the language opens this up so that illegals get funded. We've seen the tantrums that have been thrown. Luis Gutierrez, who is probably the number one demagogue in the United States Congress, an open borders member of Congress, has unleashed a tirade against President Obama, his fellow Chicago crony, because President Obama is willing to put provisions in the bill that will prohibit funding to go to illegals. And so Gutierrez is really angry about that, which convinces me, well, I was already convinced, that they are working to fund illegals through this bill, and they're going to try to find a way to, by hook or by crook, to get that done. I don't know if they will because of Joe Wilson.
Well, all this comes down to is higher taxes. At the end of the day, the American people went to these meetings and town hall meetings because they know it's going to be less medical care, lower quality medical care, and higher taxes for the middle class. Isn't that really what the people are saying?
Well, that is it. But Michael, I'd add to that. That's the analysis of the functionality of what's coming at them, and I think they understand this pretty well. There's another piece of this that's at the core of it, and that is our freedom. That, you know, here's something that's going on is the people in the most productive years of their lives are paying the most taxes. They're funding Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security. This bill that's being proposed by the president and others, not only does it require the people that are productive to continue to fund Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security, but it requires them to fund the health insurance for the people who are in their most productive years that aren't actually out there taking care of their own responsibility. And it says to those that are the most productive, sorry, you've lost your options. You're going to have to live with the policy we give you, which is the government policy in the end.
So the government wants to force people to buy the plan. Isn't that true?
I think they will set the stage so that that's the option that we have left, just like the flood insurance is set up where there is no other option.
Well, I thought it said that people have to buy this insurance, and then they're going to use the IRS to find people who don't. Isn't that in the bill?
That is true, Michael. If you're self-employed and you don't have the health insurance, a qualified plan that would be approved by the new health insurance czar, then they will tax your income at 2.5%. And if
your employer
and don't provide that, they will tax your payroll at 8%. So it's not quite force, but it is fine and tax and punish until you submit.
Okay, at the end of the day, this plan is in trouble. Obama's plan is in trouble. Obama overreached. He tried to force a Soviet-style system down the throats of America, and the American people said niet. Is this going to pass in some form or other, and what form do you think it will be in?
I think that there's a better than even chance that something will pass because the entire administration of President Obama hangs in the balance until and unless they do, which means they will compromise and use political leverage until they get to the point that they can get 218 votes in the House and 51 in the Senate. I don't know what that will look like. I don't think they will probably end up calling it a public option. I think they'll redefine public options as something else, maybe co-ops, for example. And in the end, I believe they will try to force a framework on Americans that allows them to go down the path of completing their endeavor, which is single-payer, socialized medicine, Hillary Care in 2009.
Socialized medicine, in other words, controlling not only one-seventh or more of the economy, but I keep bringing this up, Congressman, and that is that once a centralized bureaucracy is running the health care in the nation from cradle to grave, they, meaning the nameless bureaucrats, will have access to medical records of every American. Isn't that worrisome? Why has that never come up? Do we want our medical records, including what our psychiatrist knows about us, shared with an invisible American bureaucrat who can use it against American citizens?
Well, I surely do not, and I think that's where it leads. That's one of the pieces of this. You know, I do think we need to have electronic medical records with legitimate firewalls so that when a person goes into the hospital in Los Angeles, their records from Boston will be immediately available to the people that are taking care of them, conscious or unconscious. But I don't believe it should be in the hands of the federal government. I think it should be in the hands of the private sector with strict firewall regulations on it. And I think then we can provide more services to people. I think that's a modern thing we can do. Another thing we need to do is provide electronic access to the health care costs, full transparency, so that hip replacement costs everybody that gets one the same price from the same provider, as opposed to the idea of this cost shifting that's a part of our problem today too, Michael.
Well, we learned a lot today from Representative Steve King, Republican of Iowa, and I thank you very much for informing so many millions of listeners today on the Savage Nation. Congressman, thanks for being with us.
My privilege, Michael. Thank you, and keep that Savage Nation alive.
I'm trying my best. It is 48 minutes after the hour. I'll be right back.
Savage.
The Savage Nation. It was a good conversation with the congressman about the health care bill. Certain things I knew, certain things I didn't. Let's go to michaelsavage.com and take a look at what's up there. San Francisco Bay Area listeners, welcome from KSTE 650 on the dial. The next story is Jimmy Carter says Obama critics are racist. Well, coming from him, I would discard that. A white girl was raped by four non-whites, but the police in New York are not calling it a hate crime. Apparently, a hate crime can only occur if it comes from white people. Joe Wilson has become a right-wing folk hero. I don't know why they're using the word right-wing. They should use the word patriotic folk hero. But I guess today the word patriot is somehow a dirty word to the vermin on the left. From the Investor's Business Daily, 45% of doctors might quit if health care overhaul passes. Two out of every three practicing physicians oppose the medical overhaul plan under consideration in Washington. Next story on michaelsavage.com. San Fran mayor backs illegal who killed three innocent family members. That's Gavin Newsom. That's a man who used to have at least a couple of press appearances every day, has been absent of late, but he came out saying he is glad that the murderer of those three innocent people will not face the death penalty. Shame on you, Gavin Newsom. I don't know who you take your advice from, but whoever it is stabbing you in the back. That's all I can tell you. Michael Savage defies the ban and invades the United Kingdom by internet. That's right. Talk radio star Michael Savage is not waiting around for an invitation to visit the UK. I created a website specifically for the UK. Here's a sad one. Dolphin slaughter turns the sea red. That's horrible. The Japanese town's annual cull of bottlenose dolphins and pilot whales continues despite growing international condemnation. Oh, boy. Well, okay, there it is. Now, this is a shocker. This is really a shocker. Miranda warning for the Pledge of Allegiance. Some left-wingers are advocating a Miranda warning for the Pledge of Allegiance. They are going to tell students that they have the right to remain silent rather than saluting the flag. And you thought that there was no fifth column in the country? You must be kidding. 2,000-year-old menorah depiction found in the Galilee. Israeli archaeologists have uncovered one of the earliest depictions of a menorah, the seven-branch candelabra that has come to symbolize Judaism. It is 2,000 years old. It was found in the Galilee. Interesting story. And speaking of that, from the New York Post, the former director of Long Island University's Hillwood Museum stole artifacts, Egyptian artifacts, from the collection and peddle the precious antiquities through Christie's auction house. Horrible. Now there's a picture of Sean Penn stepping out with his new girlfriend. The ink barely dry on the divorce between Sean Penn and soon-to-be ex Robin Wright Penn. But the actor apparently didn't waste time getting back on his, well, we'll say feet. But we don't mean that. Newest Acorn video. A confession. I shot him. How do you like that? Obama supports extending Patriot Act provisions. Good for him. I always knew it was a good idea. On the bottom of michaelsavage.com, you will read that the Paul Revere Society and Savage donated $50,000 to the California Highway Patrol, a certain fund within the CHP that supports widows and orphans. I believe in the police. I believe in the military, and I support them. I put my money where my mouth is. I hope you will, too. Also, you can read the secret emails that blacklisted Savage, beating the liberal blacklist, banned in Britain by Michael Savage. Many of you will be receiving a special mailing from me tonight and tomorrow. Be on the lookout for it. Let's go to the callers. Texas, oh, my God, we're almost out of time. Fire away, Texas. You're the last up this hour. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, so your book about the liberalism being a mental disorder is so prophetic. These people are just losing their minds faster and faster every day.
It is. That's right. That's absolutely right. Liberalism is a mental disorder. All you're going to do is listen to Jimmy Carter.
Well, not even Jimmy Carter. Listen to President Obama. He's going to take the seat of the Security Council, which should go to the U.S. ambassador to the U.N. This will be the first time a United States president has sat in the power.
Well, that's
chair.
Right, because Barack Obama is a megalomaniac who wants to rule the world. You know, it's like the taking of Pelham 1-2-3. Now that he's got America in his pocket, why not move on to take over the world? After all, he's Obama the Magnificent.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The big thing, of course, is still the Obamacare, which we all know is, you know, you use the word socialized medicine, people say, oh, you're making it up. We already have socialized medicine through Medicare, so let's start with the fact that we're 50% or more there. This is beyond socialized medicine. This is a scam to steal the insurance industry away from private insurance companies and give the insurance to cronies and underwriters that are connected to the Obama administration, in my opinion. The fact of the matter is that's only the beginning of the problem. We don't know what the end of the problem is, but we can pretty much draw our conclusions by using not Canada nor France as the model, but Cuba. So if you want Cuban-style medical care, just follow Dr. Obama. Okay? You want empty clinics, no prescription drugs, and undertrained doctors, that's what you're going to have. Who would become a doctor? Who is going to go to medical school to work for Obama? Tell me who would go to medical school and put in all those years to go to work for a socialized medical system that pays them next to nothing and have to fill out forms answering to bureaucrats. Tell me, who's going to do that? And you're going to have dumber and dumber people going into medicine. The days of the great Dr. Kildares are over. Gold surges close to a record high. Iran working on nukes. The West is sitting quaking in their boots. And we're sitting here trying to negotiate with Hitler. So what do you see, Beowulf?
Well, following up on that, apparently Muhammad is now the number one baby boy's name in London. Apparently,
surprise, it's not number one in Paris. FBI set for more anti-terror raids in Queens, New York. They're fearing a Madrid-style subway bombing. You hear this? Bring them all in. Bring them all in under asylum laws. We're all equal. We're all equal. They all come here because they love America. And you hear Jimmy Carter, the Jew hater? Jew hater Jimmy Carter says that the reason people are attacking Obamacare now, it's not because the policy has failed, but because he's black. You hear this one? That anti-Semitic Jimmy Carter, a lifetime of bigotry.
And also, apparently, they're using this as a cover in order to defer ethics investigations. The House Ethics Committee Wednesday said it's going to put off an expanded investigation into whether Representative Jesse Jackson Jr. or his representatives tried to buy President Barack Obama's former Senate seat. So they're putting that off for the time being.
You're not going to believe this one. The San Diego County Sheriff's Department is using an LRAD device at town hall meetings. Do you know what that is? The technology was used in Iraq to control insurgents.
I guess anyone who opposes Obama's health care plan is now an insurgent.
It is now in the Sheriff's Department's possession, an LRAD device used in war zones, emits high-pitched sounds as a form of crowd control to blow out people's eardrums and make them go away. And they're going to use it at town hall meetings. The San Diego County Sheriff's Department had the device and brought it to a recent town hall meeting in case things got out of hand. Can you believe this? San Diego County Sheriff Bill Gore was recently quoted saying the LRAD was purchased for events should there be any problems. He said we could use the LRAD in place of pepper spray. Can you believe this? They're using military sonic devices in San Diego in order to control conservatives opposed to Obamacare, and not a word from the illegitimate left. Who was it who first said that this government would turn on the people more viciously than they have on Al-Qaeda? It was me. And you've seen nothing yet. I don't believe Obama is as benign as people think he is. I think he's furious. that anybody would oppose anything from his magnificent soul. Now, on michaelsavage.com, let's see. Here's a new one. Michael Savage defies the ban and invades the United Kingdom by internet. Have you heard about that one? I now have an internet presence in the United Kingdom. It says, now everyone in once Great Britain can visit Talker without leaving home. London, Winston Churchill would be proud. Talk radio star Michael Savage is not waiting around for an invitation to visit the UK, which has refused to apologize for banning him from visiting, along with a small rogues gallery of terrorist murders and neo-Nazi skinheads. Instead, he has taken the fight to the enemy. Savage has procured the internet domain michaelsavage.co.uk and is now offering an easy and familiar way for residents of the UK to visit him, or at least his website. Beginning today, all visitors from the UK who hit that destination will be automatically and seamlessly transported to Savage's main website. Here's what Savage said. Oh, that's me. If I'm not welcome in the United Kingdom, I want the people there to know I bear no ill will toward them for the extremely misguided and hateful actions of their government. So this is my way of inviting them to visit me on my home turf.
And we've had callers to the show before from England who listen to you online. So apparently your listenership is gathering strength there, too.
What about the Cambridge Union deal, Beowulf? What's going on with that? Do I have to wear a tuxedo and top hat in order to debate?
Not part of the requirements that have been listed so far.
By the way, when Pat Buchanan went over to England last week to argue against Churchill and in favor of Hitler, did Buchanan wear an SA uniform or an Einsatzgruppen uniform? Which one did he choose?
He had a dark blue suit. He may have had the armband underneath, though.
The armband. How in the world did this happen to Pat Buchanan, the man who led the call for battling against the culture wars that were inflicted on this country? How did it turn out that all of his critics were right, that he actually is sympathetic towards Nazism, in my opinion, though? How could Pat Buchanan argue that Hitler had no designs on the U.S., that Winston Churchill was a bad guy, Hitler was not so bad? How does he get away with this? The only network that would have him is MSNBC. You know, it's the 30s repeating itself all over again.
Yeah.
Where you had people supporting Hitler in the 30s, saying he wasn't such a bad guy. It's like Pat Buchanan is almost taking the place of Lindbergh, except the difference is Lindbergh flew an airplane.
That's right, Charles Lindbergh. He went over to Germany. He met with Hitler. He shook his hand. He gave pro-Hitler speeches in the United States.
The only thing he lacks are the wings that Lindbergh had. And by the way, did you see in San Francisco, Anitusum Newsom, the mayor, has come out and said that he's in favor of not pursuing the death penalty against the MS-13 gang member who killed an innocent father and two sons?
Oh, God.
And can you believe this man actually thinks he's going to win for the governorship with these kinds of insane policies?
It looks like they're bailing out the post office. The House voted to let the struggling U.S. Postal Service cover a budget shortfall by giving them $4 billion. So it's not just corporations that are getting bailouts.
Yeah, well, my mail arrives at 5 o'clock every day. Can you imagine? That's government mail, the Postal Service, the PO. So that's government mail arrives at 5 p.m. at my house. Can you just imagine what medical care will be like under the government? I mean, if you like mail delivery at 5 o'clock instead of FedEx, which gets here at 10 in the morning the next day, exactly on time, because it's private, privatized, profit-oriented, capitalism. Now switch it to socialism, government control, and you have government medicine. Can't people put two and two together? Don't they see what this is all about? And Max Backus gave a speech this morning delivering the much-awaited Finance Committee version of the American Health System remake. It's a landmark $856 billion measure, well, that's to start with, that does not include a public option. Does not, let me repeat again, does not include a public option.
He doesn't have a single Republican supporting him on this.
Well, what do they need that for? You know, that terrible killing of the Yale University lab student? Why are they calling her the next Einstein? I mean, it's terrible she got killed, but why are they calling her the next Einstein? Where did that come from? What has she done so far that puts her in the league with Einstein already? She's majoring in pharmacology, okay? Not in physics. I'm sorry, this is insanity here. Because they called her the next Einstein, likely to be the most next Einstein in high school. You hear already? The media, the schmucks in the media calling her the next Einstein. It just shows you the morons in the media already. I'm sure she was a pretty smart, intelligent girl. Very smart, right? Wonderful person. But where already is she putting in a league? What, they made her Einstein already? Why?
My recollection is Einstein didn't even do that well in school.
No, he did terribly in school. In fact, in the early years, his teachers boxed his ears because he seemed to be stupid. Yeah. He always used to drift off in his school. He was always dreaming about something. Sounds familiar, huh?
Yeah. Seems like institutions of lower learning aren't necessarily the path to great discoveries.
Now there's a new report out on Golden Gate Bridge jumpers. You want to hear this one?
Yeah.
Guess who commits suicide most often from the Golden Gate Bridge? 40 years old, white, single, and male.
Wow.
Single white males are at the end of their road. They can't get a job, right, unless they were born on Pacific Heights to a descendant of the Gold Rush prostitutes. I was in bed this morning thinking of not getting up so early. I didn't want to face another day. And I let out a big sigh, and I said, oh, God, you know, a deep one. And my dog turned to me and stared me right in the eyes. And I said, Teddy, I didn't say, oh, dog. I don't know. Maybe, you know, they used to joke and say, dog is God spelled backwards. I've seen those bumper stickers, right?
Right.
My co-pilot is dog. I used to get mad at people with those bumper stickers. My co-pilot is dog. I used to get very mad. Then I said, you know what? Hey, it's your business. If you want to put a gecko next to you in the seat and worship it, it's your business. I don't care. We may as well be a gecko-worshipping society with those ads, right? This is the Savage Nation. I'll be back.
Savage.
You know, I've talked a lot about the threat from Iran over and over again. Well, now it seems the relationship between Iran and Venezuela is turning into something that we can no longer ignore. We never should have ignored it. Joining us now is Ken Timmerman to give us an update on this phenomenally sinister relationship.
Well, Michael, I guess you'd have to say the good news is that somebody in the U.S. government is actually paying attention to the Islamic Republic of Iran and trying to do something to limit their actions. It's not who you think. It's not the White House. It's not the State Department. It turns out to be the Department of the Treasury and a very obscure part of the Department of Treasury called the Office of Foreign Assets Control, OFAC. I just published a story at Newsmax.com about the latest OFAC endeavor, which is to seize bank accounts in the tiny principality of Andorra, which is up in the Pyrenees, wedged between France and Spain, that belong to Hugo Chavez and are linked to Chavez, Chavez family members and cronies, and the Islamic Republic of Iran. And it appears to be money that the Iranians are trying to launder through Venezuelan banks into the U.S. banking system in Miami, Florida, and then offshore in Andorra into Europe and then back into the U.S. Through completely blind accounts that cannot be traced back to them. This was done late last week. It has not yet been announced yet, so we really had the first information on this in the U.S. at Newsmax.com. And it's part of a effort by the Treasury Department over the past 18 months, really, to go after Iranian banks. They have put treasury sanctions on Iranian banks to try to keep them out of the U.S. banking system. And the latest bank that the Iranians have been using is called the Export Development Bank of Iran, the EDBI. It's a very obscure organization. And last year, they set up a new Venezuelan subsidiary called the Banco Internacional de Desarrollo, or BID. Now, I think a lot of people are going to wonder, what in the world is the Islamic Republic of Iran doing in Venezuela? What possible interests could they have there? And the answer to that question is very simple. Until Hugo Chavez, they didn't have any interest there. But since Chavez has come to power, we have seen a growing business, commercial, and military and intelligence relationship between the Islamic Republic of Iran and Chavez's government. Now, I've been looking at this quite closely. Somebody else who's been doing this is Robert Morgenthau, who is the district attorney of Manhattan, who's about to retire. He's 90 years old. But he gave an absolutely stunning speech, which I report on at Newsmax.com last week, where he sounded the alarm really, on this growing relationship between Chavez and Ahmadinejad, between the Iranian boy president, if you wish, and the boy leader, the Castro protege down in Venezuela, Hugo Chavez. And Robert Morgenthau talked about the banking relationship. He talked about the military relationship. He talked about the intelligence relationship. And then he said this. He said it all reminded him of the Cuban Missile Crisis in 1962 when, quote, a leftist populist leader with a strong anti-American streak joined forces with the Soviet Union to bring nuclear weapons in close proximity to our borders. And he went on to say, although the same threat level does not yet exist in Venezuela, the United States needs to be focused on Iran's expansionism wherever it occurs.
Well, sounds like he's saying this is a serious threat to us. It's long overdue.
When you look into this and you kind of unpack that statement by Morgenthau, it really is quite extraordinary. He's saying, essentially, that the Iranian regime and Venezuela had the same kind of relationship that the Soviet Union and Castro's Cuba had in 1962. And some people are old enough to remember, I certainly am, the Soviet Union brought nuclear missiles into Castro's Cuba in 1962. I remember as a kid when we were taught to duck and cover in our classrooms and had air raid drills in the basements of public schools. Now, are the Iranians bringing a nuclear weapon into Venezuela? We don't know the answer to that. I've looked into that actually in a fictional scenario, Michael, in Honor Killing, my novel, which people can read about at kentimmerman.com. It is not a joke. It's something that those of us who've been tracking Iran for a number of years have been very much aware of. Venezuela is right in our backyard. The Iranians have direct shipping ties. They have direct flights that go from Tehran through Damascus to Caracas. They have expanded their embassy. They have dozens of companies. They have all of these new banks. They are mining for uranium in a very uranium-rich district in Venezuela. The intelligence ties are very close as well. Venezuela is just in our backyard. If the Iranians brought in a nuclear weapon to Venezuela, it would probably be very, very easy, as I show in Honor Killing, to bring that weapon by sea from Venezuela into the United States. They don't have to launch missiles at us. They can do it in many, many other ways. So what we're seeing here, Michael, is really a wake-up call. We need to pay attention to this relationship between the Islamic Republic of Iran and Hugo Chavez down in Venezuela. It's not going to get better. It's only going to get worse. And the Obama administration seems to be smiling on it, just as they are smiling on the former dictator of Honduras, blessing him. He's a Castro protege, and shunning the new democratic government. We have problems in Central America. They're going to come home to roost, and apparently our administration is not going to do anything to prevent them.
Thanks for the update, Ken.
Savage.
Obama's speech to schoolchildren ruffled a lot of feathers, even though the speech itself was really quite tame. Joining us today is Wayne Allen Root with his thoughts on the speech and what questions Obama should have been answering about the public school systems.
Thank you, Michael. This is Wayne Allen Root of RootForAmerica.com. Now that President Obama has addressed public school children all over America, and that caused a lot of controversy, after spending tens of billions of dollars, SAT scores are going down. And that the performance gap between white and Asian and minority students is widening. And that minority student dropout rates in major cities approaches or exceeds 50%. It seems the more we spend on public education, the worse it gets. So when you talk about President Obama addressing every public school student in America, you know, I'm willing to bet that the topics I just described will never be on the agenda when Obama is talking to students. And I think that's wrong. I have no problem with the president or any other government official or politician addressing public schools, but I have a great idea. Let's turn lemons into lemonade. Instead of saying, let's not do a conversation like that, let's always have open, honest conversations, and let's allow students to ask the questions that need to be asked. Here's the Q&A with President Obama that I'd suggest for America's public school students. I'd like to hear them ask, President Obama, why did you allow the Democratic Congress to kill school choice in Washington, D.C., even though studies prove that charter schools were dramatically improving the education results of minority students?
I'd like to hear the question asked President Obama. Do you care about teachers' unions, who are your big campaign contributors, more than the educational and economic future of minority students? President Obama, why do your daughter, Sasha and Malia, deserve school choice with a private school education costing $40,000 a year each when other minority students in Washington, D.C. don't get a choice? Mr. President, if public school education is so fantastic and such high quality that you don't believe choice or competition is even necessary, why don't you send your precious daughters to Washington, D.C. public schools? Mr. President, if other parents don't have money for private school or parochial school like you and Michelle do, should their children be condemned to a lifetime of inferior education? Mr. President, did you see the latest SAT scores, which show that after a 25-year effort to improve scores, they went down? We have failed miserably again. We spent tens of billions of dollars per year, yet SAT scores are lower. What do you think this means? Why would taxpayers, or why should taxpayers, be forced to spend more on this failing public education system that produces such lousy results? Mr. President, those same SAT test scores showed that despite spending tens of billions of dollars each year to help minority students improve test scores, the SAT performance gap between minority students and white and Asian students has widened again. So will you admit that public school education is a failure? Where have all those dollars gone? And knowing this, why would you and the Democratic Congress choose to kill charter school programs in Washington, D.C. that are actually working?
Well, it doesn't seem fair to me.
But on a scale of 1 to 100, public school kids rate 50, homeschool kids 89 in a national poll. Why do you think that is, Mr. President? With results like this, shouldn't homeschooling be encouraged instead of denigrated and discouraged by our teachers' unions? Are they scared of the competition, Mr. Obama? Mr. President, we spend more money on public school children than any country in the world, yet we get among the worst results in the entire industrialized world. Why do you think that is? Could it be the teachers' unions that are doing the damage? Mr. President, how come California pays the highest teacher salaries in all of America, but their test results are 49th out of 50 states? Is it therefore possible that spending more in education and paying teachers more does not add up to better results? And if that's even possible, why did you just allocate another $125 billion of the stimulus package for public education? If $60 billion per year spent by the Democratic Department of Education has produced failing results, why would you spend another $125 billion of taxpayer money? Mr. President, how come private and parochial school teachers are paid far less than public school teachers without gigantic pensions and free health care for life, but produce far better results? Can you explain that? Mr. President, how come the rankings of America's students have gone consistently and dramatically down since the day the government took over education? Mr. President, how come we don't fire poorly performing teachers? Why should a teacher doing a poor job be guaranteed a job and a pension for life? Mr. President, in the private sector, employees are losing jobs by the millions. As many as 500,000 a month lose their jobs in the private sector. Almost everyone else in the private sector is seeing major cuts in hours and pay. Virtually no employees in the private sector are seeing an increase in pay. So why should government employee union members, like teachers, be protected from firings and receive large pay increases when the money's coming from those same taxpayers that are in the private sector losing their businesses and losing their jobs and taking pay cuts? Mr. President, how come you're so concerned with rising health care costs in the private sector, but rising costs for government-run education doesn't seem to bother you? And how can government-run health care save money for taxpayers when government-run education keeps rising and at the same time produces inferior results? Isn't it possible that government-run health care will cost more and produce worse results, just like the public school system?
But they say they're doing it for our own good.
So therein lies the problem, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to see the president interact with public school children all over America, but only if President Obama or any other president or any other politician or any other cabinet secretary in charge of education is willing to question the role of the teachers' unions in the destruction of public education and the role of government in allowing teachers' unions to do it. Only if President Obama is willing to explain what appears to either be indifference or racism on his part towards the plight of minority students in this country. If that's the case, if he's willing to do that, I say let him address public school students and let him do it for hours. I'd like to hear all these questions answered honestly by the President of the United States. If he's willing to do it, the president should have a discussion with America's public school students. Do I think he's willing to? I'm a betting man. My gun instincts tell me the smart money is on America's liberal-based teachers' unions never allowing the questions to be answered. Never. Anyone want to take my bet? This has been Wayne Allyn Root. My new book is The Conscience of a Libertarian, Empowering the Citizen Revolution with God, Guns, Gambling, and Tax Cuts. And oh, by the way, I'm a homeschool dad of four young children.
Thanks, Wayne. For some reason, I kind of doubt those questions will ever be answered by this administration. I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
The theory of Marxism is that workers are alienated because they do not control their labor. And they make the products, and yet they don't profit from them. And so they say, well, we need to create labor unions, and the workers will assume political and economic power and take it away from the bourgeoisie. I've heard all of this crap in college, you know, a long time ago. And this is something that only a professor could come up with. And the reason is that an entrepreneur is the individual, man or woman, obviously, of any race, who has the foresight and the guts to come up with a product or a service, borrow the money or earn the money, invest it in the business, take all the risk, and gain most of the rewards. And in so doing, create the jobs that the workers enjoy without the worry that the entrepreneur has to keep his company going. Now, how come that's left out of Marxist dialectics? The answer is because most of it's written by college professors who we now have running America. Obama's a college teacher. The man never created a product or a service that anybody needed other than BS. Obama's number one product is BS. BS is what he sold all his life. Can you name one product or service that Obama has ever created? Can you name one company that Obama has ever created? That's why we need a capitalist for a president, not a college teacher who doesn't understand the first thing about meeting a payroll or what it takes to raise capital in order to invest in the company, what it takes to keep a company going, with regulations thousands of pages long, with lawyers coming at you from every direction threatening to put you out of business if you're too successful, again, by losers in government and losers in academia who say you're exploiting the worker. Look what they're doing now with radio. They take a dumb moron, put him in the FCC, a diversity chief, a real genius. The schmuck never did anything in his whole life except push the diversity lie that the only reason conservative radio survives and thrives is because of a warp by the corporations, he says. It's because ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, and all the newspapers in America, with the rare exception of the Washington Times, are all radical left-wing rags. So the people who are largely conservative tune into conservative talk radio as their only voice of freedom. That's the reason. Now we have a Nazi czar in the FCC who says, no, that's not the reason. That with more diversity, more localized talent, we're going to have a better nation. It's right out of the communist playbook. You want to beat the system? If you want to work the system, then work the system over. In other words, don't do it through talent. Don't appeal to the audience through hard work, but appeal to the audience through constant rubbish put out by the liberal establishment. This is a theory of revolution right out of the Marxism going on in America today under Obama. Everywhere you turn, you see the critique of capitalism and the theory of revolution espoused by Karl Marx, now being pushed forward by his minions at every level of government. So, by the way, I've renamed Teddy the Freedom Poodle. I have an 11-pound gray poodle. It's a strange thing. This weekend I went around San Francisco over by the ferry terminal. It's my new hangout now. I like to go there once in a while. I like the buzz of the market. It reminds me of my father's market, all of the different stores. The cheese store, the bread store, the meat store, the vegetable store. It's packed. And the tourists are happy, and there's a healthy buzz. I enjoy walking through the thing because they took a dismal, horrendous ferry terminal, and they turned it into some thriving capitalist bourgeoisie emporium, which I love. This is something you never would have seen in Eastern Europe, you know what I'm saying? Where would they have gotten the money to invest in this? From the evil capitalists? From the evil bankers? From the evil investment community? Schmucks? You ever go to Eastern Europe before the wall came down and capitalism came in? You ever take a look at what they had there? One rotten mortadella hanging from the wall with a line going around the block with fat, drab women? You know what I'm saying? They look like Stalin's housekeeper. How'd the women all of a sudden get so beautiful in the Ukraine from good food? Were they always like that? I can't understand it. Well, how come everyone discovered the Ukrainian beauty? They weren't like this 30 years ago? The Battle of Stalingrad, they weren't beautiful women with machine guns in those drab Russian uniforms? I mean, it's unbelievable to me. How they all get so beautiful all of a sudden? It can't all be surgery. So as I walk around with Teddy, people come up to me. Oh, are you Michael Savage? I said, yes. I said, how'd you recognize me? Through the dog. It's always Teddy. They put two and two together. They see the dog, they see the Gucci hat, and then they hear me, and then it's all put together. So I've renamed Teddy the Freedom Poodle. And I'm not going to repaint him red, white, and blue. He's going to remain Battleship Gray. I'm going to leave Teddy Battleship Gray, honestly. Cutest little guy in the world. God, they get so close to you. It's frightening. But look, the way it is they have to die before you. Otherwise, someone explain it to me. Someone smarter than me. I kept saying, why does nature set it up that we love these little creatures so much, then they die, and you're left with a broken heart? The answer is that if you died before them, who would take care of them? So God makes their lifespan shorter than yours. Oh, and I meant to tell you this. That's what I was trying to tell you. You know, because of what I'm going through, the stress I'm under, because of the evildoers in Britain and the evildoers here in the American media, I've had some trouble, you know, sleeping and thrashing and bad dreams, and I've joked about it. But I live with it. It doesn't bother me. In other words, you live with what you have to live with. It's nothing compared to what happens to people. So the other night, I think it was Friday, and I decided what was going on. Remember I told you about a moth flew in my ear? I got very freaked out. And I said, what the heck? I never had anything like this happen. I realized what was going on here, and I don't want to be disrespectful to God, because I take that very seriously. I may joke around a lot, but there's one area I don't step over the line. You know what I'm saying? The big guy in the sky doesn't like you to mock him. He's not your friend. The guy up there is not your pal. I love these churches that say it's no longer worship, it's a celebration. That's it. It's finished. God doesn't want a celebration in church. He wants you on your hands and knees worshiping him. That's the setup. God wants you to worship him. Otherwise, don't even bother. You want a celebration? Then go to a folk dance. You want a celebration? Then go to a mosh pit. But you don't go into a church or synagogue for a celebration. That's liberal claptrap. You go in there to shake, and you go in there to beg God for forgiveness because you're no damn good. You're all no good. We're all no good. We're all fallen angels. And we're all bad every day of the week. And we all know we're bad. We all know we're bad. We know that we're bad. That's why we're human. The reason that we are bad is because the human being is bad. The liberal claptrap is that we're all good. We're all born perfect. And only the evil bourgeois society makes us bad. Yeah, right. Sure, that's how it works. So I couldn't sleep, as I said to you. So I got out my prayer book. And I said, oh, I'm not into it. I got to be into it. God talked to me with the moth. God said, okay, you're not listening. He said, you're not listening to me. So I tell you what, I'm going to put a moth in your ear. And you're not going to be able to get it out so easily. Then maybe you'll start hearing what I'm saying to you. Is that you're not listening to me, God said. God speaks to me in many ways. God speaks to you in millions of ways. You don't even understand it. You think God's got to come into your living room? What, do you believe Jimmy Carter? He's got to come down in a white cape and sit on your couch while you're waving around a snake and drinking arsenic? Bill Moyers and Jimmy Carter may believe that. But that's not the way God talks to you. You don't have to swing a snake over your head and drink strychnine. You're not Bill Moyers or Jimmy Carter. You're not from that neck of the woods. God speaks to you in a million ways. I mean, I could play to you, every time I hear a newborn baby cry, you know, remember that song? Or touch a leaf or see the sky, then I know why I believe. Remember that beautiful song? What do you think that was about? That was a worship. He sees God in a leaf. The songwriter, the singer, understands that. God speaks to you every day in every way. So in other words, if you don't understand that, you have to understand that. Every breath you take is a miracle. It's a miracle when you think about the human being. It's miraculous that you still breathe every day, that you get up every morning and one little vessel didn't close down. Jewish prayer book says first thing in the morning, thank you, God, for breathing life back into me this morning. Because of the myriad vessels in my body, should even one of them be closed, I wouldn't be here. That's a miraculous concept written thousands of years ago before anatomy was understood. How was that written by the ancient Hebrews? That's why you have to understand the importance of religion and the importance of the Bible, whether you're religious or not. It's a consciousness that helps us understand the miraculous being of living. That's how I see it. So to get back to it, so I turned away from God over the last few months. I was getting very cynical. I was getting very stiff-necked. I was getting very strong-willed. I was moving away from God, starting into my cynicism again. I started to feel neglected and rejected because of what happened with Britain, and I felt all alone, and I started to turn from God, and God didn't like it. So things start to happen. So the moth in the ear, I start to say, okay, I'm sorry, I'll listen. So he says, okay, that's not enough. Listening isn't enough. Now start to worship again. Now start to pray. Prayer is a begging. Do you understand that prayer is begging? And when you're arrogant, you can't pray. Do you understand why Western man has trouble praying? And why the Muslim will defeat you at the end of the day unless you start worshiping God again? I don't think you understand what I just said to you. It was so fast. It was like a silver bullet that just went across the nation. Unless you understand. Done by the Jews, make no mistake about it. The Jewish religion was the first monotheistic religion. Then came Christianity and then came Islam. Doesn't matter who started it. What you got to understand is the same God. One God, different ways to approach that God. And what I'm saying to you is, God is not your friend. It is a vengeful God that we have. I didn't say mean, I said vengeful. You cross him, he's going to cross you 1,000 different ways. You worship him, he might let you breathe another day. So what I'm saying to you is start with the understanding that you are not God. Start with the understanding that you begin as dust and you end as dust. Start with the understanding that you come from a foul seed and you end as dust. Once you understand that and become humble again, and I don't mean humble to the next man. See, that's another thing that's misunderstood. You could be the most devoutly religious person who worships God and humble to God, and you could be an arrogant SOB to man because they deserve it. They need it because most men are not your friends. They're out to get you. This is the Savage Nation. With God's will and your listenership, I shall return.
Savage.